Hey everyone, welcome to the Mass Construction Show. I'm your host, Joe Kelly, and this is a podcast about all things construction in Massachusetts and beyond. Today is audio from a panel discussion that was held by NECA Boston, which is New England Electrical Contractors Association here in Boston. They're a national organization, and this was an event for their local chapter. NECA's been doing some great work during this downturn, keeping their members up to date, working with Local 103, putting out videos, putting out a lot of webinar content, so they should be commended, doing some good work. Kristen Gowan in particular has really been making an effort to make sure the information is flowing to her members. The panel is made up of a group of subcontractors and general contractors. In particular, it was Sebastian Brooks, Director of Environmental Health and Safety at Marquise Management, Bill Weber, Principal at Gas and Electrical, Derek Lyons, Safety and Health Manager at John Moriarty & Associates, and Jason Edick, Vice President of Risk Management at Lee Kennedy Company. Found this panel to be valuable, especially where we had subcontractors and general contractors involved. Sebastian brought a lot of quality information, seeing the company that he works for has a cleaning division that is particularly dealing with the COVID situation that is currently becoming a challenge for everybody. So a lot of great information. Hope you guys enjoy the show.
The first question is really for the GCs on the panel. Coming out of this shutdown, what do you see that you're going to need as general contractors from your subcontractors, and in this case, electrical contractors, to really, what are you going to expect out of them to help this process along?
I'll take that one first. Planning, first and foremost, and I know that's a big word, meaning it's a pretty broad term, but the level of planning that's going to go back into the ramp up is going to be critical. Planning for materials, which I think we'll talk about later, schedule adjustments, manpower density, working with us, the general contractors, to help identify where tradespeople and materials need to be, and then trying to decrease the manpower density over the space of a job. It's been one of our biggest challenges for the jobs that are still underway. And it's taken an immense amount of planning. I mean, really, really detailed planning by a whole lot of people to actually make that happen, to spread the job out and make it as efficient as we possibly can for the trades that are coming back into the job. And then on top of that, it's some training by our trade partners for their employees, and then PPE. PPE is still just such a big struggle right now in the industry.
Eric, what are you looking at?
I think, get on the back of what a couple of things that Jason said, but one of the biggest things we're going to need is cooperation from foremen and project managers, from our subcontractors. We have, created some plans. We think that we have them, in place, but each project is going to have different challenges. And we understand that, but there's going to be a patience phase of this. And we're kind of using the logic of crawl, walk, run. That's what we're telling our staff to do. And that's how we're going to probably present this to our subcontractors too, is to think about it as crawling, walking, running on the site. Everybody wants to get back to production and doing that, but in order to do it, we need to set ourselves up for success. And by doing all these new protocols and then putting these new plans into place, that's how we're going to get it done, is to kind of do it over time with the cooperation and patience of our subcontractors and their help and support. And the biggest thing for them is going to be, I know Jason said training, but communication with us and with our, whether it be our superintendents or whether it be our safety managers, having your foreman communicate with us about issues going on the project is going to be a big deal. And we're going to welcome it. And we want it to happen. And we want to learn from our mistakes, if you will, when we're laying the groundwork for the new normal, as everyone keeps saying.
I mean, you guys both, you use words like patience and planning, you know, crawling, working up to running. Would you say flexibility is part of that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I actually wrote some notes down here. One of them is, yeah, we're going to have some projects might have different entrances, exits. Some people, there might be a different protocol because of the project that you're on. So, you know, we know that some of our subs go from project to project. So flexibility might be a good word to use for that, is when a foreman goes from one job, not necessarily the foreman, but if a worker goes from one job to another job, he's not going to see the same thing. The foundation and the protocols will be the same, but obviously the job site is going to be a lot different. There's going to be some things that are on some jobs that are just going to be different than they are in other projects, and we're trying to work through that too. But being flexible, I think, is Joe, is a good way to put it too.
And I think just trying to know what the room's really wondering, and if I'm a contractor and I'm looking to return to work, does it seem fair to say that, you know, in the flexibility, Mike Collin, okay, today we're going to operate this way. We're getting more trades tomorrow. Now we have to have, you know, different start times. You have to use a different hoist. Like, is it going to, do you foresee that type of changes happening?
Yeah, but you know what I do? We've already talked about it at sub jobs. Some jobs are going to do, they're going to stack certain floors. They're going to do staggered shifts. But, you know, you just said daily. I don't see it as being a daily thing. I think it'll be a weekly. You know, this worked this week, this didn't work this week, so let's switch it up over the course of the following week. So I don't think we're going to pull the trigger unless it's something crazy on a daily type of basis. But you'll see a meeting, if you will, an end of the day meeting or a pre-meeting for the next day, and learning from our mistakes from that day, and then redoing stuff over the course of that week for the following week. I think that'll be kind of the way it works.
How do you guys see the communication playing out? I know we didn't script this at all, but when you're going to be making those changes, is that going to be emails? Is that going to be one-to-one conversations with superintendents to foremen, that type of thing?
Yes.
We've been
all the above.
Yeah.
Okay. We find what's pretty effective too. So we have the typical communications from either us directly to the subs. A little bit of background noise there on an active construction site. I apologize. So the typical communications, whether it's email or through a software like Procore, but I have to say one thing that's been super effective are the all hands meetings, especially when we start back to trying to find the new normal. Getting every tradesperson and staff member on site together in the same area, spread out by 6 feet and all that. But that direct communication with the GC and even the trade partners that we have on a project has been critical. It's been good. It gives people an opportunity to ask questions and voice concerns directly to the people that are running the job site, which are the trade partners and the GC. So direct communication was important.
Can we talk a little bit more, and I know we're a little GC heavy here before we move to the subcontractors, but I think it really lays the groundwork for the discussions with the sub side of the panel here. But how do you see the different forms of staggering of trades happening? Is it day, is it by floor, is it break, is it start times? How do we see the tools you're going to use to create social distancing and spacing? How does that play out? What does that look like, or what are you guys anticipating that look like, understanding it's fluid?
We're going to try and get the electricians in first. How's that?
Play to the crowd. I like it.
Clear the floor, Jason.
Yeah. It's a little bit. So what Derek had said about the uniqueness of each job is absolutely true. That's going to look substantially different from job to job. For instance, we have one job here in Quincy that we've had to stagger start times and break times and stop times as well. But we've also added a second shift to try and decrease that manpower density. We haven't done that on other jobs because there simply isn't the need. There's enough space to where we can spread the trades out to increase that social distancing. it's unique for every job.
Yeah, we're doing hourly right now. From what I've seen, we're sticking to first shift stuff for right now for the majority of projects, and it's in hourly. Jason, you have jobs going on. We have a couple, but not many. But we're looking at different three or four trades coming in, depending on the size of the job, at different times of the morning. Again, though, Joe, that's a caveat that's being worked out with trades. You know, we're not 100% on that yet. There's other issues being worked on with the hourlies and when people can and can't report. So
for people that haven't had the experience of being on job sites yet, if all their stuff is closed, part of the reason you're staggering is temperature taking if it's enclosed. How's that logistically working out? Is that on a trade basis?
Yeah, it's been good overall. We took a few lumps in the first couple of days trying to get everybody into the job quickly. There's some acclimation with doing a health screening and asking questions and taking a temperature that you really don't understand until you actually do it. So we've gotten to the point after, it probably took us 2 days to get it down pat to where all the trades felt comfortable with their start time and we became efficient getting people into the jobs. It wasn't smooth to start, but it smoothed out pretty well. And I have to say, I'll say this up front, the ability for trades to accept these changes has been astronomical. We figured that we would get a ton of pushback for some of the staggered start times and stop times or taking temperatures. And I have to say, the acceptance level has been excellent from the trades. It really has.
We've had the same experience. It's been incredible. The subcontractors have been unbelievable so far. The project managers, the owners, the foreman, everybody has just really stepped up and been accommodating to anything we've talked about. It's been great to see.
Okay. So to kind of give it a quick synopsis, you're looking at some staggering due to temperature taking, meaning what time people start. There's going to be some staggering around hoist and break locations. There's potentially some staggering of floors by trade, right? Mm-hmm. And then, say it.
Jason? I hope not. That's going to be a tough one to live by if it does come to fruition.
Yeah. And then kind of the last and most, you know, last resort is shift work, right? Where you're doing multiple shifts. But anybody that's listening to this could be looking at any one of those things when they return to work, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So understanding all that, Bill and Sebastian, you know, are you guys in a place that you feel like you are able to respond in that flexible manner from a manpower standpoint, from a planning standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, I think we are. We're, and most of the NECA members probably saw the communication that came out yesterday from Local 103 and NECA Boston. So we have a temporary revision to our collective bargaining agreement in terms of start times. So we have flexibility to stagger start times. We can work multiple shifts without added cost. We have the ability now to work 4-10s in a week without overtime pay, which is something we never had. So the local has shown, and I think this is smart, a lot of flexibility in trying to keep members safe while allowing the contractors to go back to work. So it's just from a sub standpoint, I feel like we have all the tools. You know, the communication from our customers has been pretty good. We're more like Derek, you know, we only have a couple of projects open right now. And so far so good in terms of productivity, but I would say that, you know, from a subs perspective, really one of our big concerns is the big unknown on productivity. I think once you get to your work site, to your workplace, that you can be productive. But moving people and moving materials, especially in high-rise buildings, can be a challenge. And then, you know, everybody, it looks like we have about 80% of our attendees have their own COVID-19 plan. We've seen a COVID-19 safety plan from all of our customers. They all look very similar. And I think what's going to be important for us as subs is that if we can try and get some some consistency as to how these plans are actually implemented. I'll give you an example. We were on a project a couple of weeks ago, and a superintendent had some COVID-19-like symptoms, and the job was shut down for a week. And I understand that was out of an abundance of caution, but that wasn't how the plan was written up. I think the plan specifically called for a formal communication path, and then, you know, backtracking contacts so that everybody who might have been in contact with that person was notified. But the job shut down. And I think that if jobs do reopen, but we have we don't have consistent work, meaning we have persistent work stoppages, it's going to be very, very difficult. We were talking earlier about what does it look like when we go back in terms of manpower. We're not quite sure that we're going to be able to get all of our workers back. And there's a number of reasons for that. I mean, you might have a worker that lives with an elderly parent or has a child that has immune system deficiencies of some sort, and they just don't feel comfortable going back to work. And you take that into consideration with the added $600 that the federal government has thrown into the unemployment program, and it may not make sense for somebody to go back to the work site. We're potentially dealing with fewer resources going forward than we had before, and I think that's a big concern for subs. And so, I mean, we'll know what that looks like more once we start calling all of our folks back. But as of right now, you know, we don't have a definitive answer from everybody as to whether or not they're available.
Okay. I'll add a little more. Thanks. But yeah, we're ready for whatever challenges lie ahead. At Marquee and at Select and all those companies have got a bunch of jobs going now, and they've all been excellent to work with, from the GCs and the owners to the other subs. I think meetings like this are very helpful to get everyone on a similar page. I think the fewer overall plans we try to follow is going to make it simpler for everybody. I think you guys have laid out a lot of the challenges so far that our workers are facing, from the testing and the staggering and all that. Just to add a little more to that, of challenges which we can overcome, I'll talk about two scenarios which we have already run into. One is just getting to and from work sites. You know, parking has always been an issue in Boston and around there. But now with if you're trying to observe 6-foot separation for your workers all the way throughout their workday, you know, mass transit is more or less out. Carpooling is somewhat out. And, even like taking a van from a centralized parking location somewhere near the job and busing your guys in can take a lot longer, too. So something to consider on the staggering front. The other is, I think as jobs kick back on, a lot of municipalities and cities are going to have a lot of scrutiny, let's say, which is good, you know, making sure we are following the social distancing and not creating a greater risk for the community around these job sites. We have dealt with that. So, in addition to having like a COVID plan for your crew, or maybe inclusive of that, you should also have like a staggering and workforce management component of that plan. It's been asked of us in certain scenarios and closely monitored by city officials. And that goes back to some of the work stoppages and kind of Q&A that happens on any project going right now. Just something to think about.
Yeah. What did that employee management look like, Sebastian?
So it was for the city of Revere, and it came in the form of a city inspector coming by the site just about daily and watching very closely to see whether from the parking lot to the site, whether workers had to be within 6 feet of each other, and then expressing great deal of concern if they had. Now, in that particular scenario, we had truck drivers picking up loads of material, right? So in order, and then you have to sign a manifest. So our foreman, you know, just to think about this out loud for a minute, our foreman has a form that he has to put down on a table and weigh down, then step away from, and then the truck driver will leave the truck and come to that point. You know, it's kind of like a game of duck, duck, goose or something, you know, of just getting all these parts to get all these signatures and all these records transferred without going within 6 feet of each other and with somebody watching you is tricky. And if, you know, we tried it with a less formal plan and it came, you know, and they weren't satisfied. So we actually had to hire a third party just to keep going, to not be shut down, to monitor the crew you know, for adherence to the COVID-19 plan that we had submitted to the city of Revere. So it was a high, you know, we managed it, we got through it, but it did present a lot of challenges and a lot of, you know, kind of learning curve for all our guys out there who are already pretty distant. You would think it was a big, wide open site to begin with, but to really live that 6 foot rule presents a lot of issues.
No, it's a good point. And I've actually seen some COVID site specific plans actually creating drawings about where delivery will come in, where the checkpoint will be. You know, everyone has seen the narrative form of these, but you know, for the first time I started seeing some accompanying plans, drawings going with these. So I think there is a lot of things to think about. And I mean, Sebastian, you bring up a great point, just signing off a manifest when a delivery shows up. You know, look how much more involved that is. So I think it goes back to what Jason and Derek saying, okay, we need planning, we need flexibility, we need to think through these things. They're all very good points. I want to touch on a couple of things that we chatted about yesterday as well, which was the shift work. I have two questions around that. And this would really be Bill and Sebastian. If you felt like you could get better productivity and just more certainty, would you rather work on a second shift and have the certainty versus working the day and have the chance of more, more, you know, unforeseens coming up?
Yeah, I don't think we're opposed to working a shift. I think that there's certain benefits to working a shift. Certainly, you know, there's probably less traffic at a loading dock in terms of material deliveries. It's probably easier to move on site, assuming that a second or third shift would have fewer workers. You know, that might make our workforce feel more safe. It might add to productivity. The answer is yes. I don't see any issues with working shift. You know, there may be the added benefit of, you know, I know in Massachusetts we have schools and daycares that are closed now through the end of June, and a second or third shift maybe, you know, makes it easier for a two-income household to manage childcare. So, you know, that might be one potential benefit to shift work. Hmm.
I agree with Bill. We always run a third shift, a rather large one as well. So it might, you know, it offers some benefits and perhaps some drawbacks for the workers, but I think it's an excellent option. And I think we really need to take it seriously. You know, my companies in particular, we were involved at Boston Convention Center, Dana-Farber, a couple, Shattuck Hospital, you know, like basically hospital upgrades working with a lot of other trades, you know, and I'll just say that tensions are high. And if a GC presents a set of rules about distancing and all that, but you have a big site with a lot of people on it, the people are going to notice when other trades encroach in their space. It's difficult to manage. So we've, you know, suffice to say, we've been to a lot of stand downs and just reasoning with people, but spreading the people out the more you can and keeping your site as unoccupied as possible while still getting the work done presents a lot of upside. You know, it's easier to manage than having a big crew all on one shift.
And Joe, you know, for our trade in particular, it's never just one shift. If a general contractor is running multiple shifts, typically we have at least one or two workers working whenever there's someone else on site in case you have an electrical emergency, lose power, circuit breakers tripping, whatever it is. So I don't ever see one shift, but I would have maybe a small concern if we were running two equal size crews in different shifts across a whole lot of job sites, because I feel like that's going to require a whole lot more supervision. And, you know, as an industry for all of us electrical subcontractors and probably for a lot of other trade contractors, you know, if you had 30 or 20 jobs going and you had, say, 20 or 30 foremen working, if now you need 40 foremen and you don't have them to supervise that shift, that could be a little bit of a pinch point.
Okay. And then as hearing what you just heard, Jason and Derek, do you guys feel like shift work is going to be a bigger tool in your toolbox than normal, or?
I do. Yeah, so there are a lot of benefits to it, right? And Sebastian and Bill touched on them. One is social distancing, which we know, especially in some jobs, tighter quarters can be a challenge. But second is productivity. And you can't really underestimate, we'll call it the economy of scale, but you can't underestimate the ability of a sub to stay efficient and make money. We're all in this business to make money. We need to keep people safe doing it. But the shift work, I think, is going to be absolutely critical on some jobs.
For us too, Joe, but Bill hit on it, the resources out there right now, we're struggling to find the people that will be able to, you know, help out for supervision on second and third shift. So it goes back to project specific, what's gonna work on what project. But Bill's right about the resources, the people right now. We're just not sure we're gonna have them to support the second or third shift.
Yeah, I think trying to balance all these things, right, which is the safety, the manpower resources, the supervision piece of that, the materials resources, is definitely going to be a challenge for everybody. From the general contractor's perspective, you guys specifically, we talked about the softer side of things, about what you're going to look for out of the subs with the communication and planning and flexibility, all that kind of stuff. But from a deliverables kind of standpoint, is it safe to say, you know, everybody alluded to, they need to be bringing the PPE to the table. They need to be bringing in most cases, their own internal COVID plan. At least what I've seen from some municipalities is that they want the GC's plan, and they need to submit it to the municipality, but that the GC plan will be having the expectation that the subcontractor will submit one to the general contractor. Not across the board, but.
Now, I've thought about it, Joe, and I think Sebastian was talking about over in Revere, the oversight from the town. I put it this way, if you have more than, I don't know, 10 to 20 guys on a project, you're going to do yourself a big favor by having your own plan when this oversight comes to the job site. I'm sure the city or Cambridge and Boston are going to have these people monitoring them. It's going to look a lot better if the subcontractor has their own plan. They certainly could use ours, but I would recommend they do a lot better if they have their own, to hand them, to show them, to say that they put their best foot forward in trying to pre-plan and do these things. And not just the plan, but having the workers document signature, training, all of that stuff would be very helpful.
Yeah. And now I might be off on the numbers here as what the right order is, but to me it seems like social distancing is number one in that plan. And then a close number two is cleaning, sanitation. So I think there's going to be some expectations, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jason and Derek, but that, you know, the construction managers, the general contractors are doing a site-wide type cleaning of surfaces with bathrooms and eating areas and door handles. But there's going to be an expectation of the subcontractors that they need to be doing cleaning of their tools and their equipment when an operator gets in and out of a machine, or when someone's using a pipe bender and then somebody else goes on it. Yes, we have gloves, but there's going to be a matter of pretty heavy cleaning component to this. Super quick, can I at least get a nod from Jason and Derek? That's probably what you're expecting.
There's a nod. That's what we expect.
Okay. So with that said, Sebastian, just to help people, okay, and hopefully this gets distributed beyond electrical contractors. What should a subcontractor or a general contractor be looking to do from a cleaning standpoint, as far as, you know, what's a reasonable material to use, cleaning product, that type of thing? What suggestions would you have to people listening?
Sure. It's a long answer for me. I'm going to try and keep it short. But it starts with one of our companies Select offering cleaning and disinfection services, and then trying to go down that road and learning about all that. So one, I would say that every GC, you know, the more we consolidate and have one plan for everybody, it'll be great. You should lay the expectations out for the subs and for the GCs. You know, as a for instance, though, I think that the GCs in general would be expected to account for somehow the cleaning of the common areas, like the door handles, porta-johns, stair rails, and similar. You know, and the sub would take on the responsibility of cleaning their own tools and their own machinery every time it changes hands, you know. For us, that meant buying more airless sprayers and more backpack sprayers, not only to clean entire sites, but also just to spray down machines between folks operating them. You know, that sped up that part of the process a little bit. It also, it's been tricky so far getting a lot of cleaning solutions, period. I think a lot of that stuff is sold out. You know, we have guys working around the clock contacting every distributor in the country just about, but all the things we're gonna need moving forward, all your companies, all your GCs, all your subcontractors, I would be ordering now if I can, you know, from thermometers to stuff you can dilute and spray is in very short order, very hard to find right now. Your shock waves, your, you know, Clorox products in particular are completely sold out. There's a few others I can name. Even just regular hand soap, which is perfectly sufficient for washing your hands and all that, can be a little tricky to get, but it's a little more common. So I would say understand which supplies to use where, and I'll expand on that. And you can't be too early trying to secure your PPE and your cleaning products. We can share some information on that following the meeting if it's helpful. The other thing to bear in mind is if you're looking at disinfection, particularly as opposed to just regular hand washing or other stuff, there's an EPA list that you can easily download if you just Google EPA Corona disinfectant products. And there's probably, you know, a couple hundred products on there from now, you know, right now. And it gets updated about every 3 days, but they're difficult to find, those products. But if you want some sort of backup that the products you are applying on your surfaces are doing the job coming from the federal government, from the CDC, there is that list available. And we can share that after.
Yeah, that's great. If we can get that from you, Sebastian, and share it. Do you know of, you know, you hear things, and granted, this is more rumor type stuff, but you hear that there's allowable, you know, mixtures where whether it's some ammonia or bleach or other common household things, certain ones you don't want to mix together. But are there things that people can use in lieu of these products if they can't get them?
I've heard a lot of things. So, well, going back to like starting this cleaning company and all that, we got input from our insurance and from our lawyers. And the path we chose was make sure, you know, it's backed by the CDC and the EPA, make sure we're not making the call essentially, and get a third party involved, you know, and have them sign off on it. So if you, now I've also heard of buying like vodka and mixing it with aloe and you made hand sanitizer, right? So Would we advocate for that? You know, we have no testing information on that or anything else. We wouldn't do it for use for one of you guys, per se. We would want, you know, all the backups and all the T's crossed and I's dotted all the way back, you know, and reviewed by a third party to advocate a position. But I think there are some solutions, like you're saying, and there's a lot of products, to be honest, that you're going to find once you start looking for them that are not on the EPA list, but they use the exact same active ingredients, you know, and that are probably, for all intents and purposes, the exact same product. You know, they're just not on a list. But you're going to face a lot of judgment calls like that as you get supplies going forward. And we can, PPE falls into that same thing. I think you guys have seen guidance from OSHA. A lot of you, I think we were talking, but you know, a lot of people throw around N95. Well, those are very hard to get, and they're being sent directly to medical facilities right now. You can get some, and we can maybe help you with, you know, find out where. But they're about four times the price right now. But so OSHA knows this, right? And there's a lot of language out there right now that is giving you a lot more flexibility on face coverings. And you're going to need that flexibility on all your supplies, from cleaning to PPE to all that, rather than mandating just one thing, because you're going to need to reach out to the entire world's vendors and the United States vendors to get the products you need to supply these job sites.
Okay. Well, I'm sure everyone's going to be looking forward to that list that Kristen will attach in some form or fashion to all the attendees. This is probably a good time to say, I see there's some questions there. We're going to look to have a short Q&A at the end, but if you do have questions, there is a question tab on the side that you'll see, and please enter your questions there, and we'll do our best to get to them. Bill, along the lines of cleaning, you know, it makes sense, Select, they do finish cleaning, and this kind of falls right in their warehouse. You're not a cleaning company.
No.
But now you're kind of forced to fall into this. How does that look for Gaston? Is it when, you know, even as much as bringing a gang box out to site and taking it off the rack truck and putting it on the floor, like, are you cleaning stuff before it goes out? Are you trying to stockpile supplies now? What's it been looking like for you as an electrical contractor now in the semi-cleaning business?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think thankfully that the cleaning isn't necessarily rocket science. It's just more about diligence and changing, you know, habits and behaviors. So we're looking at how do we procure all the cleaning supplies that we need for when we go back to work? And, you know, do we put them together in kits and send them out so every job has a consistent set of, you know, wipes, hand sanitizer, soap, sprays, you know, et cetera, just to make sure that we're able to follow all the policies that we've put together in the Gaston specific COVID-19 plan. But more importantly, I would think is, you know, we need to meet the Boston, City of Boston requirements and our general contractors plans as well. So yeah, we're having a hard time getting product, like Sebastian said. I do think that we have, you know, at least a couple of weeks, maybe 4 or 5 until, you know, we start seeing jobs reopen in Boston or Cambridge. That gives us some time, but it's going to be a little bit difficult. On the PPE front, we've had a little bit more luck. So for Gaston, we went to an apparel manufacturer to have them make face masks for all of our field workers, and we'll hand out 2 or 3 to everybody. Those can be brought home. They can be washed and reused, as opposed to like a dust mask, which we're having a hard time finding. They're also far more expensive than they should be, and obviously an N95 mask we couldn't get, and if we did, I'm not quite sure we'd put them on our jobs when I think the medical profession needs them more. We were able to procure lots and lots of face shields in addition to eye protection, but it attaches right to our hard hat and comes down and will cover a worker down to here, which adds an additional level of protection. You know, and we were talking about, you know, how do we tool a project? Do we need to have more tools on a job? Does everybody need their own battery drill? And do we have, you know, only 1 or 2 folks that are using either a hammer drill or a core drill, bandsaw, you know, whatever it is that we're using, just to limit the amount that tools are passing back and forth. And I think if we can think about, and as simple as it sounds, just think more about how you're doing what you're doing, we can limit the contamination and the exposure of all of our workers on site.
No, I mean, that's a great point. I mean, there's how, you know, planning can really eliminate, almost like safety by design, right? Okay, so everybody should have in their tool bag, a battery operated screw gun, to this or that. So we're not passing tools. Maybe only 3 employees use a particular pipe bender or cutter or whatever the right tool is, right? That's a good idea. And then you're minimizing that handing off and cleaning and all that kind of stuff. I like that. It's a great strategy, Bill. I think folks listening will appreciate that. I did see a question come in through that Kristen just forwarded along. Does everybody feel comfortable based off of the CDC's, you know, guidelines that have come out? Is everybody okay with essentially the homemade masks in lieu of the N95?
Yeah, we as a GC right now we are, but I think you're going to see OSHA change that shortly as other types of masks start to loosen up. I think somebody asked the question about a KN95, which is the Chinese version of an N95, you know, under a different governing body, the Chinese governing body, similar to NIOSH. Those are starting to loosen up, meaning some of those are starting to come into the country, but they are not NIOSH approved. So OSHA put out some guidelines about the use of KN95s, along with some other dust masks from other countries like Australia and the UK with different governing bodies. And those right now are acceptable in at least in temporary form. What they don't talk about is the bandana or the balaclava or what Bill had done with the apparel manufacturer. They don't reference that. I think you're going to see that tighten up a little bit as things start to, loosen it, or the market loosens up a little bit. You start to see that stuff flow.
Eric, maybe just to add on to Jay's point a little bit, I think I agree with everything he's saying. I think you need that flexibility to have the bandana and, let's say, the N95, though, because the guy, you're not going to have enough N95s to make it from your car all the way to the job. So you're going to maybe be wearing an apparel made, face covering 50% of the time, and you're going to reserve the higher grade PPE, if you want to think of it that way, for very specific activities on the job site to ration it out better. So for us, what I think might carry out will be, anytime two workers can't be 6 feet apart, then you go to that higher level of respiratory protection for those activities. But then for the rest of the day, if they are maintaining distance, you go with a lower or a different level. That way you're rationing the N95s, let's say.
That's a great approach, yeah. I think you'll see most plans, most municipalities I've seen, where they say, okay, what are the tasks that you need to break social distancing? You need to be within 6 feet of another employee, unloading equipment, whatever it is. They say, can you do it another way? No. Okay. Can you provide face mask, eye protection, face mask, and gloves? If you can't, you can't do it, right? So you're saying, in that case, if you've fallen into that tree, at that time, make sure they have the N95, make sure they have the face shield, make sure they have the gloves.
Yeah.
If I'm understanding. Yeah. Yeah. And you're feeling the same way, Derek, about
Yeah, same way, same as Jason right now. But like Jason said, I agree that eventually, somebody's gonna come along, we're gonna change some requirements for this. But I love Sebastian's idea too about, prioritizing your PP, your masks and your PPE. That's great. We should all start thinking about that. It's good.
Were you going to say something, Bill?
I was just thinking about, the enforcement of the 6 foot separation rule. And, as Sebastian was saying, oftentimes, especially in our trade, there's a lot of tasks that require two workers to be within 6 feet. And I think for us to be productive and to get our jobs done, collectively, as NECA contractors, we need to really understand what the requirements are in order to complete those tasks without having work shut down because we're violating, even inadvertently, the new COVID-19 policies that are applied to that job site. So, as the information comes out, and it doesn't seem to be 100% clear as to what the expectations are for us to do that type of work, we're going to need to find that out sooner than later so that we can be reactive. And be ready to go back to work, as opposed to finding out that, we need to stop a task on site, which may, somehow negatively impact the schedule until we figure out the right PPE.
Great. All right. Kristen, how much time would you like to leave on the question front here?
So we have a handful of questions relating to specific safety measures, a question on staggered start times, and then several, as expected, several questions on costs, and then a question on if somebody gets sick on the job. So now's probably a good time to turn it over to the panelists to address some of these questions. What do you think?
Sure. I'm going to ask one more question. If you could kind of copy and paste into the chat function the two or three questions you've been able to sort through that you could get to us, that would be great. So from a supply chain perspective, do any of the panelists see a point where supply chain of materials, be it PPE, cleaner, or a mechanical equipment, a fan or something like that, starts to impact manpower, right? So, okay, we don't have enough material or we don't have enough equipment to keep the flow of work going. Does anyone see any potential there where we get to that?
Oh, yeah. Yep. We're experiencing it now, and I guarantee that other people on the line are. Bill had talked a little bit about lighting fixtures and some of the delays, and I know that's more on the finish end, but we're seeing it with materials, products. Not so much PPE right now because people are making do with certain items like the bandana or the balaclava, but materials. What do you do if you don't have the materials? You can't put people to work. And we're seeing some factories that have either shut down or reduced their capacity. It's an impact, and I think it's going to be a bigger impact. If you want to talk theory for a second, I think when we start to ramp back up, you're going to see that spike in material requests all across the board. And then some manufacturers are not going to be able to keep up. So it's going to be a challenge. And I think the more time, to Bill's point, the more time that you put in today, speaking to the manufacturers and really planning out the details for 3 or 4 weeks from now when we do get back to work, the better off you're going to be. First in, best dressed, right?
Derek, just as a GC, are you looking at it that way? Just in as a GC and a subcontractor touches a particular group of supply that they need to get, and I know you guys aren't directly ordering things, but from a risk management perspective, do you feel the same as Jason, which, you know, is now the time to start looking at procuring stuff, maybe even being willing to store things now, right?
I do know that we are constantly every day talking to our suppliers about materials and things that we're going to need. So we're not doing much work right now. I don't have two projects, so I can't. Jason's in the real time right now. He's dealing with us right now. I'm really not, but it doesn't sound great. But we are, as a company, communicating and trying to talk to our vendors about certain things and trying to be, you know, first in line for those, if you will, when things do turn around. So I guess we'll have to wait and see on the other part of it.
And I'm reading these questions rather quickly. So one question just came in. Is there any consensus from GCs, CMs on basically having a specific preparedness plan? It gets into attempting to manage emergency egress routes with social distancing, you know, having certain stair towers, things like that. I think in that case, you know, that's a life safety issue where COVID's the least of your problems if the building's on fire, right? But to the, I think it's a great point that this questioner has, which is, are we going to get to a point where we have some consensus? Because I think even Sebastian, I forget if it was Sebastian or Bill, was saying consensus would help. Is there any movement there to try and get some consensus?
Yeah, there's most of the general contractors in Boston are working with the mayor and the governor to agree on one final plan that has the same protocols, but every job is going to be a little bit different. So you talk about exits, egress, access, egress, things like that. That's going to be different, but the 90% of all the plans, 95% of all the plans should be consistent when the subs come back to the city to work. Jason, do you agree?
Yeah, the AGC, the Building Trades Council, they've all worked together with a fair amount of harmony, actually. What we struggle with right now is the political ping pong between the state and, you know, the city of Boston, let's say. It's been tough. It would be, in an ideal world, we'd like to see the state and then all the cities together with
online,
single plan, so that we can all get accustomed to that type of construction. Construction is construction. Doesn't matter where you do it. Let's get on the same page with this. And it's funny, it's been the Building Trades Councils and the GCs and the AGC that have stepped up and said, we're going to put our own stuff together and then push it up to the state and the city level, which is good.
Yeah. I won't harp on it. I think what makes it difficult is, you look at right now, from what I've seen, just having to try and help some folks with writing plans, is Brookline, Cambridge, and Somerville alone, and now I have to read Boston a little better since it came out the other day, they're all asking for different things. Cambridge wants a daily report. Brookline has requirements around food trucks that come on site. Somerville wants more involved job hazard analysis. So I think GCs can work to try and get a good consensus plan, but to Jason's point, we need the municipalities to fall in line and have the same expectations as well. Because if they don't have the same expectations, GCs can work together as much as they want, but they're still going to end up having to have these convoluted plans from city to city. Next question that came in is staggered start times. Are you, as general contractors, needing to add manpower to manage multiple shifts in longer days, or are you starting to look at lessening your requirements to have a certain amount of staff on site anytime there's an employee there?
Both. It depends on the job. Some of the larger jobs that have a larger staff, we can free up a couple of people to cover a second or a third shift. The smaller jobs with a smaller staff, it's going to be more challenging. And if we had to go to that shift work, then we would have to add staff. And it's the same thing that Bill had spoken about before, right? If he has to split up two evenly numerical shifts, you know, two shifts out of 20 or 30, he's going to have to add that same level foreman for both shifts, which he may not have planned for.
This is written as, or worded as, liabilities. So I'm going to read it as such, but what do you see as the liabilities for both construction managers and subcontractors if an employee gets sick on the job? So maybe it's liabilities, but also maybe answer both, liabilities and what are the risks there, or what are the downstream effects if you do have a sick employer on site?
Maybe start with that a little bit, but you know, we had a lot of talks with our insurance company. Most insurance companies, you know, would hazard a guess, do not cover COVID-19 exposure. And from the employee standpoint, I would ask them why they felt they got sick on a job rather than anywhere else. You know, I wouldn't necessarily, it is, let's call it a potential job site exposure, but it's a potential exposure anywhere you go in the world, from the grocery store to the mass transit to you name it. You know, so to put it succinctly, I would not be trying to make illness, which there are already rules in place for, and you have sick days and certainty things, a workers' comp or a company specific issue, aside from following the steps to prevent it, more so than it already is, if that makes sense. It's going to be hard to pinpoint where somebody picked something up. I wouldn't make the assumption that just because they're working, it was work where everyone's going through all these protocols to stay apart and wear PPE, where they got that exposure.
Okay. Now, forgive me for interrupting here, because this, I think, is a lot of value to this question, but I see one of the organizers has put a note that we have a hard stop at 11. So I'm going to have to turn this over to Kristen.
Hey, MassCons. Hope you enjoyed the multiple perspectives from both GCs and contractors. We're all going to continue to try and struggle and solve these problems. And as you heard from everybody on the panel, they're all trying to do their best, and we all want to try and get things back up and running. I appreciate you listening. I would love for you to share this to in any way you see fit, whether that's, you know, by writing a review, liking it, telling a friend, any of those type of things work. Social media is great as well. So if you could do that, I would appreciate any support and any ideas that you might have. Please send them my way. I always like to hear feedback from people that listen.
We out. We out. We out.